Welcome back to Through the Word. Today we'll be jumping into Judges chapter 1. You know, every generation thinks that the generation after it is a complete mess. For example, the hippies turned yuppies that were my bosses used to tell me in the 80s that my music wasn't really rock and roll. They'd say, "You need the Doors, Led Zeppelin, Frank Zappa. That's the real stuff." We, in their eyes, were losers, entitled, selfish, lazy, and the list went on. Surprisingly, when I got older and crustier, I started to feel those exact things about the generation coming up after me. It was my generation's turn to take the throne, and we were no more merciful to the generation coming behind us. And guess what? Your turn's coming too, and it'll be the exact same. I don't know if there's any truth in anything that my generation feels or the generation before me felt, or if it's just part of slowly becoming an old person. Like the old saying goes, the music isn't too loud, you're just too old to enjoy it. Either way, in the case of the book of Judges, it definitely was true. Joshua died, the next generation took over, they pretty much sucked, and they screwed things up. Starting off well in chapter 1, they start by asking the Lord what they should do in the middle of a problem. God answers, and so far we're off to a good start. But as we'll hear in the refrain in the book of Judges time and again, in those days, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. Just like the generation before you thinks they know the best way, so the generation after them thinks they know better. And the generation before them screwed things up worse than they did. At least, no matter which way you look, in your generation, the one before you and after you seem to be complete morons. Taking a bird's eye view in the book of Judges, we see that pretty much every generation was morons. Also true in the book of Joshua, in fact, no generation in Joshua or Judges really got it right. In chapter 2, when Joshua dies, we're told the people served the Lord throughout the lifetime of Joshua and of the elders who outlived him and who had seen all the great things the Lord had done for Israel. But no sooner does Joshua die than the people return back to their old ways, so much so that at the end of the book of Judges, it's actually a grosser than gross contest winner at the bottom of a downward spiral in a society that's forgotten God. We end the book with a scenario worse than something out of a Saw movie. And by the way, that's not an endorsement to go see one. The final chapter in Judges is probably a lot gorier. Famed commentator Warren W. Wiersbe said, "Instead of exhibiting spiritual fervor, Israel sank into apathy. Instead of obeying the Lord, people moved into apostasy. And instead of the nation enjoying law and order, the land filled with anarchy." Very well put for a guy whose name is so hard to say fast. Let's hop into the cockpit of Judges chapter 1 and watch the descent into decadence unfold. The passage starts off a little bit like this. Verse 1. After the death of Joshua, the Israelites asked the Lord, "Who of us is going to go up first to fight against the Canaanites?" The Lord answered, "Judah shall go up, and I have given the land into their hands." The man of Judah then said to Simeonites, their fellow Israelites, "Come up with us into the territory allotted to us and fight the Canaanites. We in turn will go with you into yours." So the Simeonites went with them. When Judah attacked, the Lord gave the Canaanites and Perizzites into their hands, and they struck down 10,000 men at Bezek. It was there that they found Adonai Bezek and fought against him, putting to rout the Canaanites and Perizzites, and Adonai Bezek fled, but they chased him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and big toes. As a side note, there's going to be a lot of that, so get ready for it. But in verse 7, Adonai Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and big toes cut off have picked up scraps under my table. Now God has paid me back for what I did to them. They brought him to Jerusalem, and he died there. Then the men of Judah attacked Jerusalem also and took it. They put the city to the sword and set it on fire. And so the chapter starts off well with Israel starting to drive off the Canaanites, but then it all starts to go south. They start to get defeated because they start to sin. You can pretty much guess that when the people of Israel start to blow it, God starts to blow them off. Nevertheless, the children of Israel had their various excuses for it, as we see in verse 19. The Lord was with the men of Judah. They took possession of the hill country, but they were unable to drive the people from the plains because they had chariots fitted with iron. I ask, were they really unable to? That probably wasn't really true. They were probably more unwilling to, but this is an excuse, not a reason. In fact, later in the book, we'll see that chariots are no problem for God, who only has to make it rain to stop a mighty chariot of iron. What excuses are you making in your life for things that aren't yet under God's domain or control? Do you think your sin is stronger than God? Do you think the flesh is mightier than the spirit? It can be tempting to think this way, but the reality is that God is more able to set you free and liberate you than you're giving him credit for. The book of Judges is the cycle of the Israelites being dominated by their fears and compromising with their enemies and toying with sin rather than trusting God. As Moses had promised, Hebron was given to Caleb, who drove it from the three sons of Anak in verse 20. In verse 21, we're told the Benjamites, however, did not drive out the Jebusites who were living in Jerusalem. To this day, the Jebusites live there with the Benjamites. And we see a familiar pattern. In verse 22 to 26, we're told the tribes of Joseph attack Bethel, but rather than attacking it directly, they make a deal with a traitor who they release and make a pact with. We're told he moves to the land of the Hittites and founds a city called Luz, a major stronghold that will later prove problematic to Israel. Verse 27 says, but Manasseh did not drive out the people of Bethshan or Tanakh or Dor or Ibleam or Megiddo and their surrounding settlements, for the Canaanites were determined to live in the land. Are you beginning to see a pattern? You see, your sin is just as determined to live in your life too. But you haven't seen anything yet. This is only the beginning of what's coming in this book. All of Joshua's threats and warnings, his severe chastising that he gives at the end of the book of Joshua, are all about to become more than just a lecture. They're about to become reality. Like the old saying goes, give sin an inch, it'll become a ruler. And that's exactly what the Israelites did. They compromised with the very forces that God said, drive out of your lives, get these things far away from you. And eventually, they became a trap and a snare. Just a few chapters into the book of Joshua, and we'll see the Israelites being once again slaves and servants, being dominated by the very forces that God said he would drive out before them. How about us today? Does this sound familiar? I know it does in my life at times, where I choose not to believe God, that he says he has the power to drive out all sin, to break every chain, to conquer anything in my life. I decide that I don't want to put to death the members of my body, like Paul says in chapter 6 of Romans, and instead decide, maybe slavery wasn't that bad after all. That's why Paul in Galatians says, therefore see to it that none of you comes again under the same bondage or yoke of slavery. Ironically, Paul prefaces that by saying, having been set free, no longer allow yourself. Don't allow yourself to come under the bondage once again. Well, read Joshua chapter 1 today, and as you do, ask God to make their pattern, not your pattern.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.